I'm Bill Barol. Over the last few decades, I've done every kind of writing there is to do, from journalism to humor, books, movies, and television.
I'm Matt Ricardo. For the last 30 years, I've toured the world as a variety performer.
We've come together across the Atlantic to talk about creativity, what it is, where it comes from, why it matters.
Thomas Edison said, "To invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk."
This is Imagination and Junk, a conversation about the hard work of creativity. Episode 12, Chaotic Playtime. Dear Matt, if you could somehow look through your computer and examine my desk, I would scream because that would be terrifying. But if you were still there once I stopped screaming, and I can't imagine why you would be, I mean, I wouldn't be. If you were still there, you'd see a work surface that looks like raccoons live in it. There are piles on piles of things, mostly papers of various kinds, but not exclusively papers. There are also 3 N95 masks, 2 USB hubs, 2 thumb drives, a spiky rubber ball I use to massage my back, 3 almost empty bottles of hand sanitizer, a medley of remote controls, 2 1-inch aluminum foil balls I use to practice the French drop from the Penn & Teller masterclass I never finished, a coffee mug holding 37 dried out pens, a deck of cards, 3 microfiber cloths, 2 coasters, a typewriter ribbon, that's right, a ribbon for an actual typewriter, which I also have, 16 notes scribbled on 3 different sizes of multicolored post-its, a photo of me and Jennifer when we were first dating, a hunk of quartz, and a vintage souvenir ashtray from some place called Queez Golden Gate Lanes. I have never been to Queez Golden Gate Lanes. The ashtray holding some change and old brittle rubber bands, and a New York City subway token, the kind with the 5-sided punch-out in the middle. This is what I sit down to when I sit down to do creative work. Now, here's what you need to know about my desktop. There is a kind of intentionality at work. What I mean is, the arrangement makes sense to me. Is it efficient? Oh God, no. Nevertheless, it is mine. And this arrangement of things is a perfect picture of something designed to drive productivity nerds insane with anxiety. So, let's talk about productivity, where it aligns with creativity, and where it doesn't. Productivity as a modern phenomenon may not have begun with a guy called David Allen, but Allen's 2001 book, Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity, was the match that lit the skyrocket. And now, 2 decades later, Getting Things Done, GTD, has become a handle for a whole culture of productivity built on Allen's precepts. At heart, Allen's is a method for processing and acting on the billion bits of information that clutter our lives, and whose end result is often a kind of paralysis of thought. It allows you to order these bits for more efficient disposition. I called it a culture of productivity a second ago, but it's just as apt to call it a cult, because its adherents believe in it with a fervor that borders on the religious. There are excruciatingly exhaustive internecine battles on just which implementation of Allen's GTD principles is the best one. And keep in mind, because what Allen came up with is a methodology, not a product you can hold in your hand, there are approximately 1 gazillion implementations in every digital and non-digital format except, I think, cuneiform stone tablets. The Allen fans who populate the user forums at gettingthingsdone.com can sometimes treat Allen as their sun king. It can be a lot. Now, the truth is, I sort of get this. Information overload is real, and that paralysis I talked about a second ago is one of its most common traits. If somebody comes along who can help us all navigate it, great, that helps. It can help a whole bunch, which makes the sort of wholehearted devotion people have to the idea a little easier to understand. But it can't help with everything, with every kind of mental process. And one of the ones it can't help with the most is creativity. I don't think I'm setting up a straw man here. Maybe you disagree. But GTD methodology is frequently employed by writers, to take just the members of the creative class with whom I'm most familiar. And this presents a problem. Creativity is messy, and it is discursive. As we've talked about before, it involves chasing fugitive thoughts, ideas, dreams, down winding paths that take hairpin turns, and as often as not, dump you out far from where you need to go, blinking in the sun and trying to figure out how to navigate your way back. Creativity is not about straightening those paths. It's not an as-the-crow-flies proposition. And it isn't about rationalizing those routes. In fact, that's pretty much the last thing you want to do. So, let me ask you this. What can creative people take from the cult of productivity that doesn't suck the juice right out of the process? Is there some part of GTD dogma that's useful in creativity? I have some further thoughts on this, and I'd be happy to share them with you. I have them around here somewhere. I'll talk to you next time. Bill.
Dear Bill, my desk is pretty tidy. When I was a kid, when I was unhappy, when I felt out of control, which as a kid I was and probably should have been, and when I felt sad or that things were unfair, I tidied my room. I know this goes against the rules of being a kid. I was supposed to have to be yelled at to tidy my room, but no. When there wasn't much I had control over, it calmed the storms inside my little head to make things in my immediate vicinity neat. But since we're doing desks, here's what's on mine. A yellow legal pad with my to-do list on, we'll get back to that. A coaster with a photo of Honest Ed's discount store, Toronto's finest value emporium, now sadly no longer with us. Earbuds sitting in their case on a wireless charging pad, throbbing gently. My camera sitting upturned on its lens, charging. A scale model of the Starhound-class Colonial Viper Starfighter from the original Battlestar Galactica, which reminds me of my childhood and of remembering things that mean something to you. Two small statuettes of the black cat avatar of the Egyptian goddess Bastet, which my wife bought me. Oh, and there's the key to your house, which I inadvertently left in my pocket after I visited you in LA recently. Really sorry about that. I've read Getting Things Done, and like every single productivity or self-help book ever written, it reveals its big idea in the first chapter, which, in Getting Things Done case, is basically make a list. And then it repeats it for another 12 dozen chapters. All of these books should be pamphlets at most, but yeah, making lists work. I'll give David Allen that. But I'm not sure he invented, you know, lists. I tell you what, though, he has himself got some things done. According to his Wikipedia, he has been a heroin user, he's been institutionalized, he's worked as a magician, a waiter, a karate teacher, a landscaper, a vitamin distributor, a glass-blowing lathe operator, a travel agent, a gas station manager, a U-Haul dealer, a moped salesman, and a cook. He's also an ordained minister with the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness. I'm not surprised he got good at writing things down. He'd need to just to remember what job he was going to today. When I make lists, I use a method I got from Mythbusters' Adam Savage. His version has you draw little checkboxes next to each item in your notebook, and then when you've completed each task, you completely or partially colour them in. I like this method because I enjoy the colouring in. I am 53. That heroin-addled karate glass-blowing magician David Allen is onto something, though. Making lists is genuinely useful. It offloads things that might be causing you little bits of don't forget this anxiety onto a piece of paper or an app or whatever, so that your actual brain can forget them, and you can be assured that when you sit down at your desk, you'll see the list. It's like downloading stuff out of your brain's hard drive onto a thumb drive so the computer in your head runs faster. And I think that's how us messy creative types can take advantage of it. Let me give you an example of what my to-do list for today contained. Go for a run and do 10 rounds of boxing. Send invoices. Pay accountant. Talk to a couple of people I'm working on projects with. Write this script. See how all these things are non-creative, except for the last one, which just says, basically, go sit in your comfy chair, have some thoughts and make them into words. Taking the boring but important tasks out of my brain and onto a list frees up space inside my head for the artistic thoughts to run around in circles, knocking things over, being noisy and making a mess, or making a podcast script. Creativity needs space. Talking of which, can we please use your Hollywood contacts to pitch an action-adventure series about a glass-blowing karate master who uses his skills as a magician and his connections as an ordained minister to solve crime while weaning himself off heroin by making lists? I'm thinking Danny DeVito? Zac Efron? Don't piss him off or he'll get things done. $1 million idea. Write it down on your to-do list. I'll talk to you soon. Matt.
Dear Matt, okay, a little inside baseball. It's been an unreasonable amount of time since I received the draft of your last segment. A little under 3 weeks, in fact. I checked. In part, this was because Jennifer and I were preparing for, and then enjoying, and then getting back into our home routines after a week-long trip to Massachusetts to see my family. Travel is a little more fraught than it was pre-COVID, as I don't need to tell you. So this trip, our first big one in a while, took some extra energy. But that doesn't account for the whole period of delay. There was also this. This morning, when I could have simply sat down and started writing, I instead took an hour, a precious, irreplaceable hour, out of my dwindling stock of hours that are available to do this podcast and also, you know, be alive on the earth, to download a shiny new to-do list app called Bento. I do not need a shiny new to-do list app. I need to do things. Having said that, I do get the tidying up thing. I live with someone who, when stress starts circling, reflexively tidies up the house. It's not uncommon for me to walk into the kitchen, find Jennifer reorganizing the cupboards, and blurt out, "Are you okay? Did something happen?" And hey, here's a pro tip for people just starting out on the road of marriage, or for that matter, cohabitation. Don't do this. It isn't helpful. Just nod, say something like, "Oh, yeah, cool, that thing looks good there," and then back slowly out of the room. Because look, your partner's going to get some stress relief and you're going to get nicely reorganized cupboards. I mean, don't be a jerk. Take the win. So yeah, tidying up is a perfectly valid way to address stress. Similarly, list making is useful in fencing off all the knucklehead stuff that takes your focus away from a creative task at hand. But that isn't what I'm thinking about here. What I'm wondering is, can a practice of productivity help with creativity itself? I have mixed feelings on this. When I was writing complicated stories for Newsweek, takeouts in the lingo of journalism, I developed a bespoke system for getting my arms around the masses of reporting that would cross my desk. The challenge was to synthesize all this reporting, some of which I might not have done myself, into something coherent. It was like reaching into a swimming pool to grab a specific 8 ounces of water. What I'd do was, after a first read-through, I'd go back through the material and mark any nuggets that seemed interesting for any reason. The key was to be promiscuous about this. If something caught my eye for any reason or for no reason I could articulate, I'd mark it. Then I'd go back through the material a third time and tag each marked nugget of reporting with a broad thematic slug like attitude toward fame or first big break. Each of these slugs would get assigned a letter, and consecutive uses of the same slug would get numbered. So before long, the margins of pages would be littered with notations like A6 or B3 or C7. You get the idea. Finally, it was just a matter of seeing which broad themes occurred the most often. That helped shape the overall direction of the story. And of the themed nuggets, which was the most useful to include to bolster my thesis? What it was a system for extracting meaning from a mass of text. I describe it at some length here because, well, because it was a good system and it worked, and I still think it was a pretty ingenious implementation of some basic productivity concepts, although I didn't know that at the time. But there's a difference between marshaling a set of facts and plucking from the air the million dancing neural impulses that go into an act of creation. An act of creation is chaos. It's the Big Bang on a small canvas, sometimes literally so. And the magic of it lives in the associative leap, in the way you map an unknown journey across an unfamiliar landscape, in absolute defiance of logic. Can a productivity app, even one that lulls you with tranquil scenes of Japanese tea houses, as Bento does, and I'm not even kidding, can a productivity app help with that? I say no, it can't. In fact, it may be the perfect opposite of what you most need for that kind of work. You don't paint a painting, write a couplet, or compose a pop song by ordering your instincts. I'm not saying you can't use a system to clear away the detritus that gets in your way. I'm not saying you can't lay your tools out in a logical way that makes them easier to access. What I'm saying is, and we've said it on this podcast before, creativity is a beautiful mess. It lives in the liminal spaces of logical thought. That's how it needs to be. One more thing. I also saw David Allen's bio on Wikipedia, the encyclopedia that anybody with an AOL account can edit what could possibly go wrong. And the very listiness of those many screwed up accomplishments in his past is what convinced me to leave them alone. That long sustained drumroll of outlandish career highlights and lowlights struck me as, in a phrase journalists often use, too good to check. You might even say it seemed a little too creative. I wonder if the person who uploaded it used a to-do app. I'll talk to you next time. Bill.
Dear Bill, being a middle-aged, self-employed person, I too very recently spent altogether too much time trying to find a good to-do list app. One that would sync across all my devices and ideally set the list as a Windows desktop background so I would be unable to ignore it. I knew I had to devote some time to searching for this seemingly fictitious app because I'd written it on my current to-do list, which is a yellow legal pad on my desk. It took me more than an hour before I realised that, clearly, the fact that I was looking for a new to-do list was evidence that my current to-do list works fine and does not, in fact, need replacing. Still, at least I wasted some time, so it's not all good news. There's a lot about the various productivity doctrines, and I say doctrines, but really, can it be too long before one of them tries to avoid paying tax on their apps by classifying itself as a religion? Anyway, there's a lot about that world that feels patently useless to me. More trouble than it's worth, as my grandma used to say. It looks to my jaded and cynical eyes that pretty soon, any system that claims to make your life simpler and more effective quickly becomes a way to make buying their products simpler and more effective for you to do. But making a list? That's okay, I'll allow that. Lists do, I think, generally help and work. And I think they work for creativity too, or at least for the solidifying of creative thought into creative work. As you say, the act of creativity should be, at least to some extent, chaotic, playful, open. But the thoughts, ideas, and moments of inspiration that come from that chaotic play have to then get put somewhere safe so that they can be rearranged into the work, just like your B7s and A3s of someone's story. So here comes the strained metaphor. Every good chef, before they start the creative process of cooking, will set out their mise en place. They'll organise all the ingredients they need, prepare them, lay them out in their own little bowls. They'll put everything in its place, which is basically what mise en place means, of course. Now, obviously, it took months or maybe even years of creativity, exploration, you could call it play even, to determine which ingredients end up in the mise en place and deserve a place in the recipe. But once the right meats, vegetables and spices have been assembled, once the ideas have been born and put into a notebook or app, the chef can relax a little and assemble them into the work. What I like about mise en place is that most of us have it to an extent. When I set out my props before the curtain rises on a show, I'm laying out my mise. When you catalogue your B7s and A3s, you're putting the shallots and peppers that you know will enhance flavour into little bowls. And the cool thing is that mise is also used to describe the state of mind of someone preparing to do their thing. Its meaning has become simply to do the things that get you prepared. So perhaps that's where productivity techniques should sit. Perhaps they should be just a bunch of little bowls to help you lay out your ingredients before you start cooking. They should make the process of making smoother rather than complicating it. Even though the Bento app sounds like it wouldn't really be of any actual use to me, I do like the idea of the Japanese tea house aesthetic. But it's only on iOS and I use Android, so until they sponsor us, which they totally should, I'll stick with the yellow legal pad. Hope your mise en place est très bien. A bientôt, Matt.
Dear Matt, oh yes. I've watched more than enough cooking TV to be familiar with the term mise en place, going all the way back to the original Iron Chef in the early 90s. And oh my God, can we just take a second to cast our minds back over what a hot mess of an acid trip that thing was?
5 years ago, a man's fantasy became reality in a form never seen before. Kitchen Stadium, a giant cooking arena. The motivation for spending this fortune to create Kitchen Stadium was to encounter new...
With the giant tiki torches and the contestants rising up out of the floor on those hydraulic lifts like third-tier Bond villains? And Chairman Kaga, remember that goofball?
I want it, cheesy!
To realize his dream...
And the whole invented mythology behind Kitchen Stadium. Now, don't get me wrong, I like fake drama as much as the next guy, and I'm not saying I didn't buy into it. Just the opposite. I can still remember the episode where that epic asshat Bobby Flay celebrated his win by jumping up on a prep table in his giant clunky Doc Martens, and you could actually see the faces of the Japanese judges wither in shock and disgust. Which, frankly, I shared. To this day, Jennifer and I refer to anything hugely disrespectful as, quote, making a mockery of Kitchen Stadium, the way some people characterize an act of poor judgment as disrespecting the Bing. I'm just this minute realizing that all the metaphors I use to interpret the world come from 90s television. That can't be good. But okay, let's ride with your metaphor for a second. Mise en place looks good for our purposes, a GTD system for cooking, until you recognize that it's a way of organizing the elements you already know are most likely to be required in a night of cooking, the building blocks. What it doesn't account for, as good a system as it is, as ubiquitous as it is, and as you say, it's the practice of every professional chef worth her Himalayan sea salt, what it doesn't account for is the flash of inspiration that sneaks into the room when she isn't looking, the fugitive thought that says, lemon peel. You know what this thing needs? It needs lemon peel. At which point she has to leave her organizing system behind and go hunt down some lemon peel. In a professional kitchen, she'd most likely scream obscenities at an apprentice until they grated some lemon peel for her, but you see my point. Oh yes, I'm an expert on the French Brigade now, because we recently watched The Bear, which is why Jennifer and I are calling each other chef now and screaming, corner, and behind, as we move around the house. So, it's a good metaphor, the mise en place, but an imperfect one, because what it leaves out, the sudden and unexpected instinct that demands lemon peel, is what elevates an act of creation from an orderly process in which the basic elements can be anticipated and planned for, to something like magic. List making only gets you so far. My system of numbered blocks, and I don't mean to be unduly proud of it, by the way, it's just a riff on what every reporter does, that system wasn't designed to walk me in a straight line toward a conclusion. It was designed to put me in position for the moment when the 1,000 pieces of data I'd assembled would shift subtly in their relative orientation, and I could see the whole thing for the first time. That moment was never less than miraculous to me. Maybe you remember in the third Indiana Jones movie, when Indy has to get across a wide, deep chasm to save his father, and it looks like an impossible leap, a literal leap of faith, until he shifts his perspective very slightly and he can see the thin stone bridge that just a moment before had blended into the rocks and dirt opposite. It's like that. You're right that a list, a system, helps keep in place the elements your experience tells you you're most likely to need. It helps you keep them safe, as you put it. And I do like the notion of caretaking, of treating your building blocks with some respect. But the system is less important, ultimately, than the little shift in your gaze that lets you lift your eyes and see something in the picture that wasn't there a moment before. If you haven't seen that third Indiana Jones picture, by the way, you should. Remember, it's the odd-numbered Indiana Jones movies that are the ones most worth seeing. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade may even be my favorite of the five made so far, because Sean Connery was so damn excellent in it, and also because it played on the notion that, at bottom, Indiana Jones, the most intrepid explorer on Earth, was just trying to please his old man. I wonder how many grown-ass men, creative types or otherwise, have that as their engine. I'll talk to you soon. Bill.
Dear Bill, I have never seen Iron Chef, but I do know that martial arts actor Mark Dacascos was a presenter on it for a while, which is odd, but does let me suggest that people watch his movies Drive and Brotherhood of the Wolf, both of which are fantastic and very different. The only chef-type shows I watch are anything with Anthony Bourdain in it, because he was a deeply flawed but ultimately poetic human and I miss him, and anything in which Gordon Ramsay interacts with people owning a failing business. My favourite of these shows would be Gordon Ramsay's Hotel Nightmares, or, as it's known in our house, Gordon Ramsay's Your Hotel Is Shit. In one episode, he investigated his hotel room using a blacklight and found, to quote him precisely, semen on the lampshade. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is a fine movie, and it lets me use my Sean Connery voice to say, Junior! But the best one, obviously, is the first. Specifically the bit where the ship is being raided by Nazis and the captain says they can't find Indy and instructs the first mate to look for him, and the first mate gazes out to sea and says,
I found him.
Where?
There.
And we cut to Indy having swum across to the Nazi submarine, scrambling onto it and shooting his friends a salute as the theme music swells, which is, I mean, come on, that's good stuff. Anyway, I see what you mean about organisation being something that might get in the way of the magical act of creation, but let's not forget that magic, as in the kind of magic done by magicians, is almost entirely preparation. You want to see mise en place? Go watch a magician set up their act. My take on this would be that mise or not, if inspiration strikes, you're still in the kitchen. You can go and get the lemon peel, so I guess the message here is, if you're going to cook, be in a kitchen? Which might seem on its face like a fairly obvious thing to say, but again, it's perhaps about, to take us back to the Steven Seagal movie Under Siege 2 Dark Territory, which we, okay, I have mentioned in past episodes, the adage, chance favours the prepared mind. You're not forced to use the things in your mise, but you have, at least, put in front of you all the things that you know you'll need. There are still walk-ins full of other bits and pieces, and the mise was constructed at an earlier time by that same spark of magical inspiration, so that might mean that the lemon peel is already in there. But I think we're splitting hairs a little bit here. As we've said before, making something is a finely held balance between planning, structure and method, and chaotic playtime. And I think each of these two sides need the other in order to thrive. There's no point being the best, freest, most lucid improv comedian that ever lived if you are too busy making things up to book a venue for your show. Structure lets you be chaotic. Even if that chaos means breaking the structure, you still needed the structure in the first place. Without your mise, you're going to be so busy and stressed trying to find all the basic ingredients that any creative spark might get buried under the noise of your anxiety. Maybe it's all down to what kind of creator you are. Whether you need structure in order to find the space to be playful, or whether you need to occasionally pause your default playfulness to make sure you have the things you need to transform that into work. And if we agree that structure, essentially, is a pretty important part of creativity, then if it doesn't come naturally to do, I guess there is probably some benefit to having a productivity guru shout, "Make a list, dummy," at you. I make to-do lists on a daily basis, but I didn't always, and I can't remember how, why, or when it started, but there is, it terrifies me to admit, a sliver of a chance that it was because I read a productivity book. But the fact that I can't remember if it was or not is probably a good sign that I didn't get dragged into spending most of my time reading productivity books rather than being actually, you know, productive. Like Indiana Jones says in one of the absolute worst movies I have ever seen people walk out of on a cruise ship, you want to be a good archaeologist? You got to get out the library. I hope you're near a fridge when a nuke goes off, which I realise to people who haven't seen Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull will seem like a very weird sign-off. Anyway, I'll talk to you soon. Junior!
Imagination and Junk is written by Bill Barole in the US and Matt Ricardo in the UK, with audio production by Bill Barole. For more information, show notes, and bonus content, it's imaginationandjunk.com.